Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the India Independent Films Podcast, where we talk about films and film writing. I am Pankaj. I write on my blog Dichotomy Family and also contribute to articles on the IIF website. I've also again with me Rahul Desai, critic for the Film Companion and writer for other publications. Now, today we have a set of two, three topics, mainly focused on filmmakers and one surprise topic which Rahul doesn't know about. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, Rahul, so how have the last few weeks been?
First of all, I'm glad we're doing it sooner than later, because normally I think it does more than a month gap earlier. This is nice because the last few weeks have been quite busy. As you can imagine, I think they've been, as we know, July was a huge month for theatricals. You know, we had Barbie, Oppenheimer, and then, of course, in India, we had Karan Johar's film, Rocky or Rani, which has been really, like, I think we are still in that wave right now, because last week there were no major releases, so it still feels like Rocky or Rani just released, like, yesterday. It's been a good, I'm not going to lie, it's been a good month, because it could have been far worse. Everyone was very worried about how these films would fare at the box office. Those worries have been obviously dealt with, but I think my favorite part of the month is that I think most of us enjoyed all the big releases in different ways, and I think Karan Johar's film also is getting a lot of critical acclaim, which is not which is so unusual for his films in general, because I mean, he has his audiences over the years, he's had it, and box office has never been an issue really for him. I think he also wanted some kind of critical acclaim and validation from more than just the multiplex audiences and the families. And I think this time, finally, he's gotten it. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that also that, you know, our movie-going ways have changed, and we now crave for what Karan Johar represents as a filmmaker in Bollywood far more than what we used to before the pandemic. I think it's the same that went for Shah Rukh Khan, because, you know, absence sort of made the heart grow fonder. It worked for Karan as well, and it helped that both of them made some very entertaining films, and Karan obviously shows that he's one of the rare filmmakers, I feel like, mainstream filmmakers at least, that have shown that maybe he wants to progress with the times. Not a lot of 90s filmmakers or old school filmmakers tend to do that. We see that problem with Yash Raj, who still struggles between, you know, tradition and modernity in this film. Karan Johar, I feel like, clearly has taken a stance in this film, and that's a nice thing, because you're basically essentially critiquing your own career. And I always like filmmakers who do that. You know, I mentioned even in my review that I think Surat Bhadjatya tried to do that last year with his film, but it didn't entirely come off. But it was a sleeper hit also. So it's always good when the intent is correct. It sort of gets audiences a little more interested in the person behind the filmmaker. I feel like Rocky or Rani is a result of that. Of course, it helps that, you know, it has Ranveer and Alia, who have great chemistry. And so, yeah, I'm happy the film is doing well as well.
Yeah. Do you think he's sometimes a little too harsh on his old work?
I think so. Because, I mean, I wouldn't say harsh, but of course he's self-critical in a way that, because, you know, the thing is, even he knows that he's built an empire on espousing certain values in his film, right? And now it's 2023, he's working in a, like, now he's a producer more than a director. He has been running a production house, very successful production house for very long. So I think because he's hired so many young people, and because he's surrounded himself with younger generations of voices, I think he's also realized that, you know, this is the future, and I think it wouldn't be like small of me to admit that what I built this empire on was maybe okay for its time, but it's not okay right now. And that's always tricky, right? Like what is okay in 98 or 2000, 2001 is, it's always going to change. The world is going to, this country keeps changing every 5 years. So I like the fact that he's basically getting influenced by the filmmakers he hires. And I always maintain that Dharma has hired like some very interesting voices in the last decade or so, far more than YRF, far more than any other legacy production house. So, and even if you may not agree with the fact that he keeps having launch vehicles for, you know, star kids and all, that is on the acting front. But I think on the filmmaking front, he's always been very progressive. And he's read the need to change with the times. And I think because of that, that self-critical thing comes in. And I feel like he's become more vulnerable, as he mentioned also in some interviews that he did. He's become more vulnerable after all the controversies, after the pandemic. He went off Twitter. The trolls really absolutely affected. Like, people may think that celebrities don't get affected. I think Karan Johar looked like he got very affected by what happened online. And this hate wave that went against a lot of them in the industry, with him at the top of it. So I think that made him sort of like, I mean, he's become older and wiser, sure, but I feel like that made him more vulnerable enough to sort of critique his own cinema. That's not to say he disowns it. Like, I think a lot of us still keep watching Kuch Kuch Hota Hai, K3G and all his films time and again without caring about, you know, what it says about family or what it says about how we should look at families. I think we still enjoy it. And I think he's managed to integrate that, the parts we enjoy, which is filmmaking over-the-top style, with slightly more progressive values. And I'm not saying that he's become like very progressive, like say Anurag Kashyap or you know, whatever, any of these new age filmmakers. I'm just saying that he's managed to get a balance better than before. And I think that's worked in his favor, because what the filmmaking style, the aesthetic does is get in the traditional audiences, the families, and what the writing does is get in us, our modern audiences, and say that, you know, even Karan Johar is admitting that, that, you know, families are not the be-all and end-all, and even they can be wrong.
Right. I think he's making an action film next, so it'll be very interesting how, you know, he turns that one out. I'm sure it'll surprise the audience, because, we didn't, honestly, going by the looks of trailers, didn't expect Rocky and Rani would be, like, a good one, but it just surprised everybody. Oh. I think the same is going to happen in his action film as well. Okay, we'll come back to him, but then let me start with we wanted to talk about Ram Gopal Verma. What has happened to him?
I wish everyone in the industry will ask you the same question and then laugh about it, you know, very like almost like it's become an inside joke. I mean, what do you say? Like, it's so difficult to figure out what has happened to him. Of course, you can see a maverick filmmaker becoming a victim of his own legacy, becoming a victim of his own arrogance, not being able to handle the greatness that has been bestowed upon him, because he did change Hindi cinema, almost Indian cinema, and he changed genres of filmmaking. He created genres of filmmaking. So all that, if there's ever an example of how it goes to your head and how you can't recover from that, I feel like Ram Gopal Verma is a prime example. Because, you know, I have a couple of weird stories, because when I was doing my filmmaking course back in 2007-8, and I wanted to learn about filmmaking, Ram Gopal Verma is still a big deal. I think it was still on the back of the Sarkar film. And almost everyone I knew after graduating wanted to work with him then. And I think I was also interviewed there or to work on some film or the other. But a friend of mine got that job because it was a production job. And I think it was one of the Veerappan films. He had started hiring basically his writers to direct films by then. And I remember going to that office and seeing that aura of Ram Gopal Verma everywhere, like him walking and like five minions behind, like basically just saying yes to whatever he said. And I knew some family friends who had started working with him, like they were associated with my parents in some way earlier. And I saw them also working in that office, the factory basically, which is in Andheri. And it's very famous. It had become very famous over the years. A lot of aspiring scriptwriters and filmmakers used to go there without any meetings and try to meet Ram Gopal Verma. And you could see it then that by then he had become bigger than, I think in his head also he had become bigger than the industry itself. And he thought he was making a parallel industry. And you could see that with the quality of films, even the Sarkar films were going downhill. And you could sense that there was that it wouldn't last forever. And I don't know exactly what happened to him, but we can see that it's just very difficult to watch him now, whether it's on his in his interviews on Twitter or whatever it is. But you know, what he did basically was change the sort of path of Hindi cinema irrevocably. Of course, he brought in a bunch of very, very fascinating, interesting voices. Anurag Kashyap, most of them today are basically descendants of that school of filmmaking. So I think he did his bit and he did his job very, very well, better than most at that time. But, you know, it's sad to see where he is right now.
So, you know, he's done horror genre. He's done gangster. Mm. He's done road trip movies. He's done these dream movies. He's done so many different things. Which one is your favorite or anything that stands out for you in his work?
I think he's... So, I mean, of course, he's really... I really like his sort of... his horror films, the way, I mean, because the Hindi cinema wasn't exactly known for horror, still isn't. Mm-hmm. And the few that Ram Gopal Varma was in charge of, I think those were some of the most memorable, like whether Bhoot or Kaun or Raat, and you'll still not forget them, growing up on them. Even if you watch them now, you'd notice the influences of Hollywood and global cinema, but you'll also notice that Ram Gopal Varma has his own language, how he uses Bombay or he uses a location or a culture in terms of horror. I think he started that. So, and I'm a big horror, like I've always been a big horror follower. And more so in these last 10 years or so, you haven't had a lot of good titles in that genre, especially in Indian cinema. So it's always, we always tend to go back and revisit these classics. And for me, he's done a great deal there that a lot of filmmakers haven't carried on in terms of the genre. And of course, Gangsta. I revisited Satya recently because I think it completed 25 years. And I wrote a piece about my favorite moments from that film also. Funnily enough, this was only the second time I had watched Satya. The first time when it released, when I was a child, and I didn't remember much. Of course, Uday Bhatia, who's a friend of mine and critic, has written an entire book on Satya. I still haven't read that book because I had just watched that 25 years ago and I had known nothing about this film. So when I watched it again now, this time I realized just how dense and how important that film is and how I had to keep reminding myself, okay, sure, you've seen this scene before, but remember this scene came later on in Hindi cinema. The filmmakers later on started making derivations of these, of the camera work, of the scenes, of the mood, of all the gangster sort of tropes we see. They came later on. And I had to keep reminding myself that this was original in terms of, you know, Indian cinema. And it was fascinating to see. And I realized how much he's contributed to the kind of gangster flicks. Because that's the one genre we've consistently gotten the most interesting filmmakers and the most interesting actors and voices there. You know, Anurag Kashyap did it later and absolutely, you know, exploded on the screen with Gangs of Wasseypur. So I feel like those two genres, obviously, we'd associate the most with Ram Gopal Varma. But personally, if you ask me, I love what he did with horror. And I'm very sad that it hasn't been continued in any way, or it hasn't evolved in any way in modern Hindi cinema.
Hmm. I think we spoke about Kaun. Do you remember Raat?
Very less. I do remember faces and images because obviously when you watch it when you're young, it haunts you, right? Yeah. Like, and I will never forget certain faces and moments in that. But I don't remember. Yeah. While I was writing about Kaun or Satya, I was reading about Raat, and you know, snippets of it came back to me. The genre, the narrative itself. But I don't remember specifically because I don't think I had the courage to rewatch it again after that.
Right, right. And then I think there was one more. I think Darna Zaruri Hai.
Oh, yeah, Darna, that was the game changer.
I don't think he made Darna Mana Hai, but he directed Darna Zaruri Hai. So I haven't seen either, but yeah, Bhoot, I think we spoke about it. Now, let's talk about this. Very, very, we can't talk, miss that. Rangila. How is that one? What's your memorable thing about Rangila?
Yeah, Rangila, like, unfortunately, when we were kids, it was always like, do you like Rangila or do you like DDLJ? Because they were in the same. Yeah. And it was a clash of two styles of cinema, two styles of filmmaking, parallel in the cinema and technically parallel in the cinema and mainstream in the cinema. And kids obviously had to choose a side. So obviously all of us were, you know, on Shah Rukh Khan's side or Shah Rukh Aamir basically. And most of us, I think, went for DDLJ, at least back where I grew up. And Rangila was looked at as the enemy for the longest time, or Ram Gopal Varma's, you know, even Aamir Khan, because it starred Aamir Khan. And what a fantastic role also, you know, to do that sort of role. Then, of course, only later on, as I started, you know, getting into films professionally and started rewatching a lot of old films, did I realize how how really original and good Rangila was. And you saw a lot of actors, whether Khans or Kapoors or, you know, whatever it is, tried to do that Mumbai Tapuri role again. And I don't think anybody did it like Aamir. I don't think anybody saw in him what Ram Gopal Verma did at that point. Anybody decided to subvert what Aamir was, a chocolate boy till then, and, you know, have him in this kind of role. And Shah Rukh tried it terribly with Ram Jaane, and, you know, a bunch of actors tried to imitate the Rangila aesthetic. I don't think anyone really pulled it. And it's also a lovely little film on its own, right? Like, it's, you have an aspiring actress who actually makes it, and she has a childhood friend who's the polar opposite. She outgrows him, and there's also a film star involved. So I think Ram Gopal Verma is so always so astute at reading the industry itself, because he grew up sort of making films and, you know, sort of almost making films within films most of the time. And because he was such a nerd of films, you'd always see strands of filmmaking in his films. You'd always see the fact, a backdrop of a film industry, backdrop of creative people. And I think what he did in this film was a great balance. You know, you saw what Bollywood meant in 1995-96. You saw the single screen, you saw the what aspiring actresses used to go through back then. And you see stands of it even in Satya, right? Because she wants to become an actress then, a singer there, and she has to deal with a very shady music producer. So you see Bollywood backdrop there as well. And a producer being killed there. So Ram Gopal Verma was so ingrained into the industry, the myth of the industry, the realities of the industry, and he was so behind the scenes all the time that he just couldn't help himself. And to make the industry and to make Bombay and its relationship with Bollywood such an integral part. And I think Rangila got that balance better than a lot of other films.
You know, like the Farah Khan made Om Shanti Om, but I always look back to Rangila as that film that sort of did that fantasy, you know, you could be with the star. Like the whole Bollywood, the meta moments, and that whole Stephen Kapoor, who was running for Vidhu Vinod Chopra. I think he confirmed finally in that interview with Anupama Chopra. So I was watching that. The Rangila is so, good. The only thing I feel, you know, like, Yash Raj has such a great production quality. So when you look DDLJ now, it doesn't look old. But, you know, when you visit these nine, like Ram Gopal, like Rangila, it looks a little old, although the content-wise, Rangila holds up better.
Yeah.
But, any memorable song from Rangila?
I think a lot of boys in the 90s grew up immediately while watching Rangila in India, at least. Urmila was, we had never seen anything like that, right? Like a sex symbol and so blatantly on screen. And I think, like, she really, that was some role. And that was also, the music just synced so perfectly with the image that Ram Gopal Verma saw of Urmila. I mean, later on, it became really shady and corny and sleazy, but with Ram Gopal Verma and a lot of other actresses. But the what he got out of Urmila, what he saw in Urmila in that film, and the way A.R. Rahman's music just, like, exploded in your faces there, it was pretty amazing. I can't even choose a favorite in that, like, because a lot of the Urmila dance sequences were also her, song sequences were also her image of Bollywood, the Bollywood that she wants to become. And that was basically her mind also saying that this is the kind of music I want to dance to, and this is the kind of films I want to be part of. And she was very unapologetically trying to be the very hot heroine that she has no qualms being, you know, like a sort of sex symbol for most of India. And I think that film within a film metaness really worked, and A.R. Rahman's music really got it. Like, of course, for me, you know, just slightly more than other songs, I'd say the title track has been my sort of favorite, because it keeps playing in my head from time to time. And especially for how it was shot in the film, how Urmila looked in that particular title sort of track. Though, you know, that's all of the music was also part of a soundscape we hadn't heard before. We had heard Roja and Bombay, but they weren't as commercially viable as, say, Rangila was. So A.R. Rahman, for a lot of people back then who were Bollywood fans, A.R. Rahman's track in Rangila, his soundtrack in Rangila, was our first exposure of what this man is and what a genius he can be in terms of creating an alternate, a mythical sort of soundscape that goes so well with Ram Gopal Varma or Maniratnam's films. And if you notice, all of these filmmakers weren't inherently Bollywood filmmakers. Ram Gopal Varma had made films in the South, as had Maniratnam. So it was very nice to get a different cultural sound in Bollywood, and thankfully that went on for many years.
Right. And especially that flute that plays in that Tanha Tanha, you know, so
yeah,
many, you can instantly identify that this is Rangeela.
Yeah.
And even Hai Rama or Mangta Hai Kya, you know, you just
Mangta
can't stop.
Is, yeah, amazing.
Stop talking about it. Like, and then of course the opening credits also, he's started with like Sri Devi, and then he talks
yeah.
about, you know, all those. It's just a great thing. Have you seen any of his films from the South? I'm ashamed to admit I have not seen even Shiva.
So I watched Shiva very long time back, but no, I've not seen anything
yeah.
else. Like, again,
yeah.
I watched Shiva like in the 90s itself. So no, I'm not very exposed to what he did there down there. But I think what we saw in Hindi cinema in the 90s was an extension of that voice.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember Mast?
Of course. I can't forget Mast. When you were talking about Om Shanti Om and Rangeela being, you know, like
yeah,
same
yeah.
template, I thought of Mast immediately. And Mast is again, you know, such a personal and weirdly intimate extension of his Bollywood dream or his reading of Hindi cinema, and that same, you know, like the superstar and the nobody sort of. Against all odds, and Mast I really liked back then because it gave us all a chance to dream. And by at Bollywood, you have to remember that time was so larger than life. Shah Rukh Khan was such a large, there was no accessibility, there was no social media. Urmila had become a superstar like overnight by then because of Rangeela, and because of that, we always used to dream of these stars. There was that distance used to really make us revere them, and I think that he captured that in Mast very well, because of course we had seen Notting Hill and we were big fans of, you know, what Julia Roberts did in that film, and it just felt like more oriented towards India, you know, that entire larger than, and we all dreamt of having a superstar hiding out in our house by then. Like we all dreamt of, we all used to wonder how it must feel to talk to a woman like that, or an actress like that, or an actor like that. If they had to cross paths with us inadvertently, would our obsession with that star turn into love, or would our obsession remain obsession? And that, of course, most of the time that obsession is very dangerous, as we see fandom these days. And but I like the fact that Ram Gopal Varma chose to sort of turn it into more than just that, you know, it turn it into something more tender, something more, of course, it was very unreal and it would totally not happen, but it was wish fulfillment also in a way, because I would think that it would turn into a stalker situation, and I would think it would turn into something really dark, but Mast was a nice little sort of diversion from that template.
Yeah, I somehow, like, Rangeela and Mast are two of my favorite Ram Gopal Varma
films.
Yeah.
I can see why. Yeah.
Okay. Was Sarkar a sort of a good adaptation of Godfather in Indian context? Did you like Sarkar?
I liked Sarkar. I liked the first one very much. I think it was a very good adaptation. I think they got the Bombay politics spot on. They recreated a time that was very suited towards a sort of Godfather adaptation. There was a right mix of sort of melodrama and realism in that film. And you could see Ram Gopal Varma sort of falling into his pet tropes and those camera angles and those dramatic moments and the film schooly look. But I think Sarkar was a very well-written film. And I think it was directed, I think that was the last of great RGV. It was the last of his greatness. It was because by then it had started fading already. I'm not a big fan of what came after that in terms of Sarkar, but I think it was a very, for those who are familiar with Bombay politics and with the political landscape in the last 20, 30 years in Maharashtra and Mumbai, I think that was a very entertaining and very relevant film.
I think I also agree, like after Sarkar, he just went
yeah.
There's been no downhill, especially like films like Rakcharit and all, so gory and with those weird camera angles that he just like puts camera behind, like you know, on the ground. You know, there was this big controversy where, of course, this is an obvious question. When he went on that 26/11 attacks, I think that was sort of, should he have gone? I mean, it's, I know the answer is no, but do you that effect, like, do, should filmmakers have gone to these sites immediately?
I don't, like, see, the thing is, most of us knew why he went, right? Because his Ram Gopal Varma, he's clearly thinking of something. But there was also like that he was associated with the family in a personal way also. But the thing is, it just, I don't know if there's a right answer to this, because artists can't help themselves. They think a certain way. That's not to say they are exploiting a tragedy immediately. But of course, RGV isn't politically correct. He doesn't care about whether what the people think. And he still has a very successful commercial like YouTube sort of OTT business, which we don't even know. And he has his audiences. He represents a certain kind of B-movie filmmaking today also. So I don't think he's ever cared about that. And I wasn't surprised to see him on, you know, that 26. Of course, he shouldn't have gone, and he should have waited for a while and gone behind the scenes. And now how you see, you know, Mumbai Diaries kind of shows coming out and them doing their research behind the scenes and sort of figuring it out. But yeah, you know, that was also a very blatant sign of how he was going downhill, both professionally and personally, and how it was sort of interlinking with each other. And I feel like that was as loud a symbol as any that, you know, we are never going to see the RGV of the 90s again. He's sort of turned into this Kera Dam sort of insensitive, larger than life figure who thinks he's the messiah of film students all over the country and of cinephiles all over the country. And he's gone, it's totally gone like south after that. And I think that is a defining image. It's interesting that you brought that up, because that is, all of us remember that he was there and how he was criticized for that. And of course, I think filmmakers or artists should be more cognizant of situations like that. And but at the same time, I know exactly, you know, why someone like him would be there.
Right. Have you seen Aag by any chance?
Yeah, I have.
Is it really that bad? I have not seen it.
So honestly, like, given the stuff that I review on a weekly basis in the last like 10 years or so, see, look, RGV ki Aag was really bad for its time, which is saying a lot, because there used to be some really bad films. And as far as adaptations go, and wanting to like sort of not disrespect, but wanting to like really turn a classic into something provocative for no reason, I think that was one of the bad examples of it. I won't say it's the worst Hindi film I've ever seen. I've seen far worse over the last 10 years. But because it came from a high-profile filmmaker like Ram Gopal Varma, who was making classics just less than 10 years before that, and who had changed the path of Hindi cinema, him then saying, I'll change the history of Hindi cinema, was very weird, right? And then saying that, I'll put my stamp on it. It was tasteless, it was stupid, it was weird. I'm just amazed he managed to talk people into doing that film. But he could, because he still had that currency then. He still had Amitabh Bachchan's trust. He still had so many finances still believing in him, that he was not being a pest for the sake of it. It's just part of his genius. And we used to look at geniuses like that. But Aag, I think, confirmed for a lot of people that there was no way back for him. It was a terrible film. I remember watching it a few years later when I was in film school or after that, and we were just drinking one night and we're like, let's get drunk while watching it and, you know, and enjoy how bad it was. So I think a lot of us hate watched it, and and it's certainly not the worst thing out there. But I think it's one of those flashpoints in Hindi cinema that told us what happened to a filmmaker who was known for sort of changing everything. And it's that's the point you can see he fell off the deep end.
So I'd like to share something on him. Like, I read his autobiography last 2021 or something. I read his, it's called Guns and Roses. So where, you know, he talks about how he's actually been influenced by Ayn Rand and the Fountainhead. And you know, that book is basically about this misunderstood genius, and who is like, you know, who is just doesn't care about the world, that who doesn't get it. And you can see his how he has become like that, I feel. And then you see that influence in all his films, even the Satya, you know, the first shot, that not the first shot, basically the shot of Manoj Bajpayee on the like on the seashore talking about Mumbai ka King Kong, whatever. That's actually, when I've read Fountainhead, that's actually an influence from that scene in Atlas Shrugged, how that guy stands at the hilltop and says, you know, I am sort of the king.
Right.
So I see that. I have to still research and write a piece on that, but I just brought it up because it's been long. You see that in all of his, even Nach, if you've seen. Nach is again a film about, you know, you don't care about like basically a misunderstood dance teacher, or I don't remember exactly, but yeah, I just wanted to bring that up. Anyway, how about Nishabd? Was it tasteless?
Yeah, weirdly, I didn't mind Nishabd. I thought I don't know. I have something about, I guess that film was still giving me glimmer of hope, saying, okay, he's gone senile. But there is still something of a filmmaker's bone in him. There's a storyteller's bone in him, where he's not afraid to push the limits. Because I don't think anyone else could have done that, you know. And having Amitabh and making a Lolita story like that is that's, and it had a very interesting soundtrack, from what I remember. It had Jia Khan's face was fascinating in that, and her, the way she did that role also, I still maintain it was as good as it could have gotten. And it's not a perfect film. There were like bouts of like RGV like crossing the line and becoming, and then remembering that people are watching him for who he is. But I still think it was an interesting film. I don't think it should have been panned the way it did, or that it, I don't think history will look back at it as bad as, say, RGV ki Aag, any other of his flops. I think Nishabd was still, I think, one of those last swings at the fences, which may not have worked entirely, but I still think there's a lot to take away from that film. I don't think it was tasteless, though.
Right. Same. I think it was not as bad as, you know, the critical. It was trying to do some interesting thing and a very bold topic. And especially Amitabh doing that sort of stuff.
I can't imagine him doing something like that.
And it's not easy, you know. It's you have to be very, like, it could go very weird. But I didn't feel that, you know, it was getting that territory. Anyway, I think we spoke a lot about Ram Gopal. Now let's move to another sort of character who's lost his way, Abhay Deol. First, let me talk about, how do you think Manorama 6 Feet Under, do you remember that film?
Yeah, it's an excellent film, and I revisited like a couple of years ago while watching Raat Akele, after watching Raat Akele, just to see how sort of influenced both those films were from each other, like how Raat Akele sort of derived that entire template from there. And I thought it was great. I thought it was a very good film. I thought it was very good filmmaking. And it also like really captured Abhay Deol at a particular point in his career, where he was willing to turn his limitations into a weapon, right? Because he was a Deol, because we knew he couldn't act really well, and he did appear stilted most of the time. He still turned that into some such fascinating script choices, film choices, becoming a parallel sort of cinema champion in those years. I think Abhay Deol, it's a very good indicator, Manorama 6 Feet Under is especially very good indicator of how you can basically do your own thing while being sort of a limited artist, if you have the sensibilities to go a certain way. But, you know, you're right about losing his way and all. And I think most of them from that era who tried interesting things, I feel like the bitterness of not being acknowledged or validated as much as they should be, or not being given as much credit, and sort of mainstream cinema still existing in its own bubble, I think that's driven a lot of them off, you know, into this certain space. But those were good days. Those were Abhay Deol and Anurag Kashyap coming up around the same time, and John Abraham trying very interesting things as a producer. So those were very interesting days.
Right. That's what I mean. My comment was exactly sort of what you mentioned. Like, he's got a little bit of, you know, in his interviews, he comes across as very sort of disappointed that nobody treated him like he tried to change the industry and people are a sellout, those sort of a thing. Let's talk about your favorite like of work of his that's memorable to you for his films.
I mean, I really like how he pushed himself in Devdi, like as a performer. Mm. I don't think he's been a good actor ever, but I think Anurag Kashyap, even though they may have had a very volatile relationship on that film, I think they brought the best out of each other. I think that's as far as Abhay Deol can go, as far as like disassociating himself from the Deol legacy and creating his own. I felt like that was as far as he could go. And he really wanted to do something. He wanted to change things. And you could see it in that role. But my personal favorites were the slightly gentler roles, like in Sochana Tha, even Manorama 6 Feet Under. I really liked him in Zindagi Na Milegi Dobara, even though he was one of three in that. I thought his performance and his role really went hand in hand. Very fascinating, well-written character. I felt like I really ended up liking the idea of him in films for the longest time. And I thought that was also around the time an actor like Imran Khan was coming up, you know, on the side in mainstream cinema, even though despite being a limited actor, he was doing some very good films. So there was space for people like these, you know, there was space for people who like to think slightly different and who try to experiment a little more. And I thought Abhay Deol represented the best of them in that sense. And I wouldn't say I have a favorite Abhay Deol performance. I just think that I think most of his roles were very enjoyable and interesting. And you could see that here's a sort of legacy child challenging themselves, and they're doing their own version of saying mereko baap ka property nahi chahiye, main khud ka umpire bana lunga types. And it may not have worked eventually, and I can understand his bitterness now, but I think he worked with some fascinating filmmakers like Imtiaz Ali and Anurag Kashyap and a bunch of them, Zoya Akhtar. So I won't say he didn't. He was in Ranjana as well. Like he was, and he kept doing very interesting bit roles in films. So I won't say that he was, he's been totally forgotten, because he came as recently in Trial by Fire, you know, as the husband. Yeah. And I think he did a very good job there also. It's not easy playing a grieving husband and father and being second sort of fiddle to the protagonist of the series. And I think he was very, you could see how he had been directed and how he reeled it in as an actor also. So yeah, I've always been a big sort of cheerleader for him back then. And I hope he ages well and does the kind of roles he did in Trial by Fire. And not, you know, do some weird Netflix film that nobody remembers.
In fact, that was my next question. Did Shanghai remind you of Trial by Fire? I mean, Trial by Fire. Have you seen Shanghai? Do you remember Shanghai?
Yeah, I've seen Shanghai. I remember bits of it. And that's a good comparison, actually, because there is a similar kind of aesthetic and vibe. There's a similar kind of disgruntlement with the system. And a very sort of, you know, like very subtle, not subtle, but very obvious undertones of like anti-establishment apathy. And I felt like that's also an example of how Abhay Deol chooses some of his titles or his roles. He sees something that not a lot of actors can. There's an intellectuality, there's an intelligence, and there's an awareness of what's going on in the country that he would choose some roles like that. And Shanghai isn't one of my favorite films. I won't say it's my best Dibakar film, and it slightly got involved with itself a bit too much, became a little too inaccessible. But I still think, it's a very, very worthy film to mention in the same bracket as Trial by Fire.
What's your favorite Dibakar film?
My favorite Dibakar film, I think Oye Lucky Lucky Oye would come very close to my favorite. I think what he did with Love, Sex or Dhoka is still one of the most audacious things a filmmaker could have done for that time, even though it's become very common now. I think one of those previous films, his first three films were fantastic, and it'd be tough to choose between them.
And did you like, I know we are digressing, Detective Vyomkesh Bakshi?
Not a big fan. I liked what he did on a technical level very much. I think he's, as a filmmaker who is Bengali, he had also his idea of Vyomkesh Bakshi very solid in that sense. A very good casting also. I didn't mind the casting at all. And the atmospherics and the way the world building was fantastic. And the way he looked at Calcutta also. But I don't think the film worked overall for me. For example, I've seen it like once and I forgot most of it within like a year. And it's not very memorable in that sense. I think his experience with Yash Raj, which has been recorded, he didn't have a very good experience, came across in that film a little. It showed that he was also struggling to, and that remains one of the only films that had a press show. Yash Raj doesn't have press shows normally. It's always Friday morning. Critics have to watch it on their own. And that was the only one that was shown on Thursday. And I think Yash Raj also burned their hands with it. And I think that's where we saw a little bit of Dibakar struggling with having to compromise on his vision to make something more mainstream.
Yeah, I think now he's coming with LSD 2. And yeah. I don't know what happened to his film on Freedom, Unfreedom. I think it's... I don't think it's coming, at least till this present government is there. Okay. Was Abhay Deol miscast in Aisha? Do you remember Aisha? Because I'm asking that Aisha is one of my favorite films.
I remember Aisha. I liked Aisha very, very much when I watched it. And even though I was young and I used to watch a lot of Hollywood type of Clueless films and I loved that genre. And I think Aisha came as close to accomplishing it. Thought great casting of Sonam Kapoor as Aisha. But I thought Abhay Deol, I don't think he was miscast in that. I thought it was a fairly good, solid casting because Abhay Deol does tend to have that slight air of condescension when he's acting in mainstream films. Something you'd see in, something you'd see in Manoj Bajpayee when he's acting in mainstream films. Like, you know you're better than these films, and that's why that condescension can be read as the character's patronizing attitude towards the character. And I thought towards the rest, basically. And I thought his chemistry with Sonam was interesting in that. It came across as something that, what am I doing in this film? But I'm better than this. And that sort of went into his character also. I thought that slight uppityness in the first half of the film really worked for his character.
Right. That's what I asked because, you know, post the film, he sort of disowned like his own film. And I didn't feel that. And I mean, as I was saying, I just love Aisha. It's one of my favorite films. And it's so nice to know that you also like it because, you know, it's a film that a lot of critics don't look at it. They don't even remember that film. But I thought Aisha was just fabulous. The way
Was it Amrita Puri in the film? Amrita Puri
First.
What a terrific performance. Like, my eyes went to her saying, who is this actor? She needs to keep acting for the rest of her life. And see, these are things, even though you watched it so long back, you still remember. Lovely soundtrack as well. There's nothing not to like. Like, of course, it's this also the sort of film I can understand critics may look down on when it released. But I enjoy that film. I still watch parts of it.
Yeah. Somehow I think, you know, like it's the Twitter criticism. Just because it's a rich person's film, it becomes shallow. So, it's not really.
But Zoya made it cool later, you know. Yeah. Like Zoya, the one thing she did was actually make us notice that this is a legitimate genre that is entertaining and deep at the same time. Sure, Aisha wasn't deep or anything, but it was fun and it was. You have to look at it through a certain kind of lens, which I always did. Like, I think most of us like voyeurs because most of us are middle class or whatever. We tend to enjoy these kind of stories because it's like a fantasy world to us. And Aisha got the fun of it. And I think, you know, films like Shandar try to pull it off later. And I think a lot of the same template has been used with Sonam Kapoor films also, but it has never worked like Aisha has.
Would Ranjana survive today? A film like
that? Yeah, good question. I don't think Ranjana would survive today. The trial by social media would be so strong that there'd be calls for its banning. And I'm not saying we don't need wokeness, but there's an overdose of it on the internet. We know that they'll jump after the one thing that they find in a film. And these are film people who don't even watch films. Without watching it, they'll be like, this theme is there in this, apologist and misogyny and such a toxic hero. How can we have it? But, you know, I really like the film even then. And I still think it's one of the better lead performances in Hindi cinema in the last decade or so. And I still think it was a tragedy. You know, the guy died in the end. And for being a toxic man, for being a misguided lover, for being a stalker, for being all those people he was in that film, he, even though the lens sometimes forced us to look at him with sympathy, I still think he paid the price for being that man. You know, I still think it... Kanchana isn't a love story, it's a tragedy. And if you look at it that way, I think it's a story of what we call a villain and of what we call an anti-hero. And I think if you look at it like that, it entirely works. And I think the filmmaker and his, you know, and his collaborators have tried to do it time and again after that. You know, like walk that thin line between what is acceptable in society and how films tend to sort of fetishize it. And I don't think he succeeded, Anand El Rai succeeded the way he did with Ranjana. Of course, having said that, I don't think it survived today, but I still think the balance was there.
Yeah, definitely. Ranjana was great, especially the music. I wanted to ask that question about the ending. I sort of forgot. I had written it down, but it just slipped out of my mind. I wanted to ask, like, basically... Did you know that, did he know that he's going to die? Am I making sense? Forget it. Let's move to the next question. I was trying to ask, like, I don't remember that ending. Like, did he know that he's going to be killed by her?
But I think what the main thing is, the ending, as haunting as it is, I think he wanted to pay the price.
Yeah.
And he wanted to be killed by her is my reading of it. It's the same question, would Dilse be accepted today? You know, I think they fall in the same category for me. And I think he wanted to atone for whatever he had done, because in his own very twisted way, and I think he knew it was coming.
Yeah, yeah. This was I was about to ask, and now I remember it. Yeah. Okay, now let's move to the other topic. I thought about asking you about Mumbai films.
Yeah.
Films about Bombay. And this topic came to me when you wrote about that Zoya Akhtar piece, I think 2-3 days ago, where you spoke about Gully Boy being one of your, like, sort of the favorite, like, Bombay films. Are there any other Bombay films? I know your favorite, Tu Hai Mera Sunday.
Yeah.
Any other Bombay films that come to your mind?
It's also such a fertile sort of genre of cinema, right? Like Bombay films, you can get it wrong also so badly. I really enjoyed the way Raj and DK made Family Man in Bombay. You know, I really liked the Bombay in Family Man, and also very Bombay thriller, Bombay series. I can't imagine it anywhere else. You know, I think they did the same thing in the Shahid Kapoor series, I think, recently. So their portrait of Bombay is something also I'm a fan of, because they have a very wry understanding of how the city ticks, and I feel like that you see that that is my kind of Bombay that I love seeing. You know, the contradictions in it, the humor, inherent humor of surviving in Bombay, and I see it, you know, time and again. I feel like they did it even in their previous films, in their early films. You know, like Shorya, they've continuously had a very real understanding of Bombay, not an NRI understanding as such. Even though I enjoy that genre of cinema as well, but I'd still have to, for me, someone who's spent the last 20 years in Bombay, I still think Tu Hai Mera Sunday is such a, it's such a wholesome portrait of middle class Bombay, of even the little things that you don't see in between big scenes in Bombay cinema. You know, of having to find a place to play football on Sunday, those things matter a lot to adults in Bombay who spend the whole week, you know, like doing a job or spending time with a family, and they need that de-stressing that few hours every weekend. And I think that the Bombay I see in that makes me feel very close to this city, and something, it's the kind of Bombay even I used to play on Sunday every Sunday for years. And I really sort of, that film really spoke to me on a very deep personal level, because there are shots in that film of Bombay, of a Bombay you don't often see in any other Bombay, you know. And sure, Gully Boy shows us a certain part of Bombay which I've never really gone into, but I admire deeply, because there's such a great dramatic understanding of that city in that. And yeah, for me, these smaller films do a very good job of capturing the Bombay. I think there's a short I wrote about some time back also. I forgot the name, but it won at MAMI as a student film some time back. And I think I remember writing about it. And that's another, it was basically a film about a young couple, and he was new to Bombay and she had been in Bombay all her life, and he romanticized it more than her, and that's why there were conflict in their relationship. And it was a lovely, it's a montage of a young couple spending time together, living together in a very middle class existence in Bombay. And I really like that, those kind of visions of Bombay without romanticizing it.
I remember, I think we've spoken in this podcast, your whole passage on Tu Hai Mera Sunday. I still remember that, where you've spoken about, written about how every one of these guys belongs to a different region. One from Matunga and one from Gujarati, from that, some other area. I remember that passage. So anybody who's listening to understand Bombay, I would recommend that to read your piece also. Because, you know, I've never been to Bombay. So it just gives an understanding of how the city is. Because, you know, I can talk about Delhi, like, you know, I've been brought up in Delhi. But the way you wrote it, it just helps understand the city itself. Okay. First Wake Up Sid, then a little NRI based Bombay, then
I'd say Wake Up Sid is, it's a mix of how sort of Dharma might think, or how that sort of 1%ers might think that hustlers figure it out in Bombay. Because sure, Ranbir Kapoor's character is closer to the NRI vision of Bombay, but the way Konkana's character is treated in that, and the way she, on a sort of intern journalist reporter salary, she's living in a small flat in Bandra, that's the Dharma version back then of struggling, you know, of living. On that salary, you can live with like 6 people in a 1 BHK is our reading of how Bombay is as a journalist, especially. But here, you know, you have this cute little flat in Bandra where you can, where it's called, it's small. So it automatically says that you're struggling. It wasn't as down to earth and rooted as it thinks it is. But as far as Dharma film is concerned back then, I think it tried more than others. You know, I'd say the Bombay in Luck by Chance that we see, the Bombay where I think Arjun Mathur and his flatmate stay, and where Konkana stays there, that's more authentic. And that is something you can associate with the profession they do. They're struggling actors. They probably get money from home, or they are part of the gig economy, and that's all they can afford, you know, that small little, not even a 1 BHK, it's a 1 RK. And I think that's a very valid reading of Bombay, and the way even Farhan lives with his Masi there, and then, you know, sort of then graduates and all. So that's another kind of Bombay I thought was very fascinating.
And of course, we've spoken about the lunchbox, so I won't ask again.
That, as good as it gets as far as Bandra is concerned, like it's so on point, it's not even funny. Like, it's so Bombay that, you know, you stop thinking it's a Bombay film after a while.
I also like the Ek Mehrik to the Bombay they showed, the family one. That was also not entirely. And of course, you mentioned Bombay Diaries or Mumbai Diaries. How was that in terms of portrayal of the city?
It was pretty on point. Like, I thought, I'm not just talking about the attacks and where the action is happening, which is Kama Hospital and like VT station and all. Those are fine. They've recreated it very well. They've shot it very well. And they've been very geographically authentic to where the cars are stopped and where on Marine Drive, where in front of Metro Cinema. And if you spent enough time in Bombay, you know exactly that this is exactly where it happened. And they insisted on shooting it right there. They didn't try to cheat or fool viewers into thinking this is Marine Drive or this is Marine Lines or whatever it is. So I think they were very loyal to the locations. And that's not something you often see. And even in the sequences where the attacks aren't happening, where you're seeing character parts, you've seen flashbacks, you're seeing a crumbling marriage. I think that was very... It wasn't screaming out like, look at us, we are a Bombay film, because we know that a terrorist attack is going to happen in Bombay, so please love this city so that you feel sad when the city gets burned. They weren't being patriotic about Bombay. They were just showing Bombay as is. Even the Taj portions, they were very loyal to, you know, even the street portions where you run onto the street in front of Gateway of India. For people who have lived here, that is as... that's as authentic as you can get, you know, on a geopolitical level also. And I thought it was very well shot. And one of the biggest merits of that series was the way they shot the city.
Right. And of course, Talash is also there. There's so many Bombay films. Yeah, you just can't keep on...
And I have a feeling they do, you know, I have a feeling Bombay in cinema tends to be far more fascinating and fertile in terms of narrative value, in terms of character, in terms of... It's enriching to see the way every filmmaker has their own view of Bombay. Even the way, you know, Ram Gopal Varma did in Rangila, that Bombay basically. And so many older films had their own version of Bombay. So for some reason, even One Two Ka Four comes to my mind. I don't know why. But you know, it's so weird to see that filmmakers have so many diverse views of Bombay. And it's very different from the way filmmakers view Delhi, or they view North Indian parts, or they view Punjab, or they view any other film. So Bombay has been a favorite to shoot in, of course, because of the home of the film industry. But other than that, you can see from the films and the shows that whether these filmmakers have grown up in Bombay, or whether they are looking at it from a distance, or whether they visited Bombay as tourists, or they come here for work and notice some things, idiosyncrasies of Bombay that even we locals don't. So I always find it fascinating when I see Bombay on screen, even today.
Right. Absolutely. You brought out this point greatly. Like, you know, Delhi is sort of one, or Punjab is sort of one version, but only recently we've seen this dystopian Punjab. Also, but Bombay has been so diverse. Even Lust Stories, the Konkana film.
Exactly. And that is on point.
Yeah.
Absolutely on point as far as that particular demographic is concerned, you know.
Yeah. Okay. I think we've covered all topics. I had one topic which I'll take for next time, but I had two questions remaining, which I sort of found from your article on Zoya Akhtar's films.
Mm.
What questions are you actually tired of answering? You mentioned that people keep on asking you what's your favorite film. What kind of questions, assume it could be anything. Are you just tired of answering whenever somebody asks you for an interview or a podcast? Do you have any?
I mean, like, who's your favorite director, filmmaker, basically falls in the same category? They're very generic sort of questions where I don't think film people ask them so much as, you know, people you meet in everyday life. Mm. And another is like, why don't you like any Hindi film? Which is so untrue. I'm sick of the reputation that I don't know how it's caught on, and maybe FC has a role to play there. But, you know, it's all in good humor eventually. But that's not been the case. I've just seen more contemporary Hindi cinema than most people have in the last 10 years, and tend to think that because of that, you obviously a lot of 85% of them fall below average. So I review all of that, and it may give you the illusion I don't. But, you know, I like the Karan Johar film, I like a Zoya Akhtar film, I like a Anurag Kashyap, a Vishal Bhadwaj film as much as anyone else. So, I'm just sick of answering that question, saying why don't you get impressed easily? It's untrue. Like, anyone who's been reading my reviews for more than 5 years will know that that's not the case. And that's another question, like, I get sick of, like, answering.
Yeah, I don't get it. I think it was that one... just general interview where you mentioned something and from there it got on. Not an interview, it was some comment, you know. If they've read your reviews, I don't see that as a problem. Even the Hollywood films you've written so many.
I panic all the time also. And This
Okay.
difficult to please reputation
Yeah.
is a little too stereotypical. Like, it's like you want to put someone in a category, and no critic wants, like, no critic looks at themselves as someone who needs to be impressed. We
Yeah.
just review every film on their own merit, and I don't care about a reputation and all. So it's very weird to be told that.
And what kind of question do you like answering?
Do I like answering? Good question. I
But
like answering very perversely. I like answering the question, do you read a lot? Because that's automatically related to my craft and my writing and my reviewing. Because obviously everyone reads, and a lot of people assume that even critics or writers who write so much are big readers. And I like the reaction when I say, no, I don't read. Then, because then I can explain my part of it. I don't, like, obviously I don't suggest that everyone doesn't read, but I have my little quirks of, first of all, you know, low attention span. Secondly, as a writer, I don't like to get influenced by different styles of writing, and I like to keep my writing in self-discovery mode, where you're discovering new phrases, words, sentences. So, which is why I've never really taken to reading after becoming a writer. Before that, I used to read off and on. But I like having this conversation about reading, because a lot of people tend to be snobs about reading and be like, if you don't read, you can't write, which I don't believe is true. And I have, like, even I am evidence of that, and a lot of other writers are evidence of. A lot of other writers are ashamed to also admit that they don't read, but I think it's fine. You do it your own way. And I just recently read a book, so it's not like I don't read at all. But when I travel, I read, because it helps me become a different kind of person, helps me gather my thoughts and become emotionally intelligent. And I like that part of reading, where you're not reading to learn how to write, but you're reading to learn how to think. And whenever I read, whenever I'm traveling, I'm vulnerable. That's why I read then. So everyone has their own way. So there should be no set way. There should be no one telling you, you need to read 5 books a month to become a better writer. I don't think there's a method like that. And I like answering that question because of that.
Absolutely. Okay. All right, Rahul, I think we'll talk about Karan Johar in our next segment. I think we covered a lot. I think Ram Gopal Varma, Abhay Deol, and Mumbai Films. So thank you as always. And we'll be hopefully back in a few weeks from now. So
yes.
Thanks again. Thank you.
Thank you.